How did America go from being oil independent to becoming indebted to over $30 trillion and invaded by more than 2 million illegals in such a short time?
Is the current administration in Washington just weak and confused, or are they radical and Marxist?
This is Bob Boyd.
And Jerry Boyd.
This is Issues in Education. Victor Hanson Davis is a historian and teacher with a PhD from Stanford, and he's a senior fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution.
Victor Hanson Davis is the author of The Dying Citizen: How Progressive Elites and Globalism Are Destroying the Idea of America.
Victor Hanson Davis, you wrote that Joe Biden, who was elected as a moderate Democrat, is really the most radical president in our history.
Joe Biden, on every aspect, he's the most radical president that we've had, I think, in our history, more so than FDR. FDR, the New Deal, he tried to pack the court, he did all of those things, but Joe Biden, whether it's his appointments, his judicial appointments, the open border with 2 million people, the skedaddle from Afghanistan, he's the most radical president. The deliberate printing of money, $2 trillion deficit, $30 trillion national debt, the mandates, all of that is new. It's a level of radicalism we haven't seen in a long time. I don't think we've seen it from a president.
It's shocking to see how this one president has so transformed our nation from being energy independent to now being dependent on foreign oil, which is a very real security risk, weakening our national security.
It seems so illogical for Biden to cancel, on day one, to cancel the Keystone Pipeline and our oil independence, yet enable Russia's Nord Stream 2 to make Europe dependent on Russian oil, which threatens Europe's independence.
This president took the largest oil and gas producer in the world that was completely immune from Middle East pressures, and he took that and he blew it up. We're producing 2 to 3 million barrels less. We're subsidizing wind and solar as we've never done. And the result is that I just filled up the other day, and gasoline is about double what it was under Donald Trump, and natural gas is more than doubled.
Being dependent on foreign oil when we have the world's biggest oil reserves in the ground in this country, it seems crazy to buy oil from other countries, and that makes inflation hit the highest rate in 40 years in this country.
When you look at inflation, we have not had in 40 years a 6.5% annualized rate. It's going to go up. We've never had in our memory supply chains disruptions. I flew over the port of LA last month on a commercial flight. I've never seen anything like ships out on the horizon without absolute presidential inaction. That we've never had 2 million people cross the border in 1 year. We've never had a defeat like Afghanistan. We had something like it in 1975 in Saigon, but that was a long, slow process, and we didn't leave the equivalent of $80 billion in the hands of terrorists, $1 billion embassy, and $300 million refit of Bagram Air Base. So I could go on, but you get the picture. So by these rubrics, it's hard to find anybody who's done a worse job in the first 11 months.
What nation would abandon its own citizens and our Afghan allies to be enslaved and slaughtered by our mortal enemies?
Turning over $80 billion of the world's most advanced weapons, planes, helicopters, air, and army bases was insane. It doesn't seem like the Democrats want to unite this country.
Joe Biden does not want to unite America. The left does not want to unite America because they're not Democrats, they're not liberals. They're not even progressive now. They are hardcore radicals, and they believe that their agenda will never get 50% support of the American people. And therefore, they have to change the constituency, bring in 2 million people a year from impoverished countries with no high school diploma, no marketable skills, and offer them immediate federal assistance, and then grant them amnesties to vote. We're seeing 800,000 illegal aliens probably vote in New York local elections. So they want to change that demography, and they want to change the system.
So that's why we see the southern border completely open to allow unlimited illegals to flood in, because Democrats know Americans won't vote for their crazy agenda, but illegals will.
We're also seeing how Democrats use the IRS against conservatives, how they weaponize the FBI and the CIA to spy on President Trump. So the supposedly neutral federal agencies are really turning political, which sounds a lot like tyranny to me.
They want to use institutions that were nominally neutral. I'm talking about the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the IRS, the DOJ. When we look at a John Brennan, what he did, or a James Clapper, or a Mark Milley in the Pentagon, the IRS does, or what the DOJ did, they are now active participants, whether it's climate change or transsexual, transgendered operations, women in combat. They have a social agenda. They believe they do not need the majority of Americans to enact this transition to a radical socialist democracy from a constitutional republic, because all the methods that we in the Western world use to communicate and disseminate information, Google searches, Facebook, Twitter, email, they feel they can control it, and they can censor and adjudicate who gets to participate, the order of a Google search to reflect certain agendas. When you look at K-12, academia, and the print and traditional media, they feel they have all of these levers, and they can manipulate public opinion, or they can gain power through them, and they really don't like democracy or people being able to vote on referenda. They told us when Joe Biden won that this was a referendum on the beauty and strength of democracy, and then when his polls crashed in August after Afghanistan, they've never recovered. We're told that democracy is broken.
Like all ruling elites, they don't like serving the people. They're not public servants, but want the people to be their servants. So they use a crisis to gain more power.
They've never liked the people. They only consider democracy useful when it promotes their agenda. And that agenda is usually only reified when there's a sense of crisis. COVID, Donald Trump, 2008 meltdown. That's how they come to power.
The Democrats, who run the mainstream media, created an image of Biden as being a moderate and Trump being a crude, ignorant president who angered and alienated our allies abroad.
But when you think of how Biden totally deceived our allies in Afghanistan and left them without warning, Biden destroyed any chance of allies trusting in us again.
We convinced our European and British allies to go into, say, Afghanistan, and they were there for nearly 20 years. And they suffered enormous cost casualties, not as much as ours, but they attacked us and not the Europeans or the British, but they came. And so when we decided under Joe Biden that we were going to get rid of the 3,500 Americans, then the first obligation would have been to go to our NATO allies and say, look, we came here first and we're going to withdraw last. Instead, we just skedaddled and we left all of our allies to fend as they could.
You can see how pathetic a lie it was to say that President Trump was Russia's puppet when Trump challenged Putin at every step, and Trump made America energy independent, flooding the market with American oil, bringing down the price of oil, and diminishing Russia's source of income, thus undercutting Russia's economy and halting their invasion aspirations.
That pretty much sums it up. When we had this two-year Russian collusion hoax, well, we demonized them under Russian collusion, and the point is that we have an active enemy now. Putin is no friend of anybody's, but if you're going to polarize and have an active enemy and demonize them, you're in trouble, and that's what we're doing. The NATO alliance, especially the Eastern Europeans and the Baltic states, no longer means anything. The Europeans and the Westerners got what they wanted because they were even more fiercely anti-Trump than were the American left or the American never Trump right. They wanted what they got, and a lot of us warned them that if you just ignored Trump's rhetoric and look what he actually had done. He had sold the Ukrainians offensive weapons. He'd upped sanctions on the Russians. He flooded the world with cheap oil that the Russians hated. He killed 200 mercenaries in Syria that tried to attack a U.S. installation. Trump's policies were actually one of the most anti-Russian policies we'd seen.
We thought we would bring China into the world economy as they became more capitalistic, but instead, they remained hardcore communist. In fact, they weren't grateful to us. They wanted to feed us, and they want to rule the world.
And we had a lot of goodwill toward pre-Maoist China because of the American relationship with China and the World War II experience with China. We said the more that we are magnanimous to China as it sheds its communism and fully emerges as a capitalist country, they will reciprocate that magnanimity with gratitude, and they will become a member of the Western democratic community. And this is going to be wonderful. They're going to follow a trajectory like India, for example. But they were communist, and they never renounced communists. They were proud of it. And communists looked at magnanimity as weakness to be exploited, not as kindness to be reciprocated. And so that started this empowering China.
The FBI director Chris Wray told NBC he was blown away by the massive scale of spying that China is doing right here in America. Christopher Wray said there is no country that is a greater threat and more severe threat to our economic security than communist China.
All during the 90s and 2000s, when you found a professor of computer science that was working for the Chinese, when you found students that had a cabal that were sending stuff back to China, when China was dumping, when they were stealing patents, they were stealing copyrights, when they were manipulating their currency. Here in the United States, it was, well, we're so strong and we're so powerful, we wouldn't want to be racist and attack the Chinese. And then Wuhan came along, and you can see how ill-prepared we were to deal with the Chinese. And now we're in a very ridiculous situation of finally waking up and saying, we're going to have tariffs, and the Chinese are thinking, we're going to have a bigger economy, and we're ahead of you in so many areas of technology and fabrication and assembly and production. We just need a few more years with you, and then we're done with you. That's what's worrisome, that we're not as powerful as we were. At some point, we're going to be a country that's not going to run the world, as we did in the post-war era.
With our universities producing little Marxists, we've got homegrown communist sympathizers who hate capitalism, Christianity, and their own country, who see conservatives as their greatest enemy right now.
The enemy of America right now is when you have Silicon Valley with a 10 square mile area that has $5 to $6 trillion of market capitalization, that money is very powerful. It can go into a campaign as it did in 2020, $400 million plus, and to vote particular ways. So our problem is that we've got a very, very globalist population, and they do not believe in traditional American values or patriotism or nationalism. They feel they're citizens of the world. Tony Blinken said he wanted to invite the UN and to adjudicate whether the United States was racist or not.
A lot of Americans don't even know who Tony Blinken is. He's the U.S. Secretary of State.
Liberal Democrats control most of America's major institutions, universities, the media, internet, social media, and federal agencies like the FBI, CIA, IRS, and the East and West Coasts.
They do control the institutions, and they do control, at times, the government, but they don't have the majority of the American people. Even with all the terrible things that happened to Trump, the hoax, the impeachments, the Januarys, they still couldn't get more than 50 senators, and they have a narrow margin in the House. They're going to lose both in 2 years. I think they know it, and they have a good chance of losing the president. That's what worries them. You look at a map of the United States, and you see two blue strands on the coast, and then the entire country is red in between, 90% of the geography and about 51 or 52% of the people. That's what they're worried about. 2 million people in the last 2 years have left blue enclaves, Illinois, California, Massachusetts, New York, and gone to places, Tennessee. They're going to Texas, to Wyoming or Montana or Utah, etc. So they're afraid that their blue state paradigm of high taxes, big government, appeasement of criminals, homelessness, that doesn't work. So they're in crisis right now, and they're afraid they're losing the majority of people. They don't know how to stop it. Any sane person would go into Joe Biden's office and say, you've got to close the border, finish the wall, this is killing us. Or you can't keep printing $2 trillion and paying people to stay home, this is killing us. But they're not going to do that. They double down.
So with the radical policies of open borders, appeasement of Russia and China, and transsexuals in the schools trying to redefine what a boy or a girl is, a lot of people are realizing that the grave situation we're in is mobilizing them to get active and turn back the radical revolution.
I think that we're starting to win now, and I'm talking from an area that's 95% Mexican-American. Donald Trump got 45% of the Latino vote here. Mexican-American males, 52%, because abortion on demand, transgenderism in the schools, and anathema for people. They like to be militarily strong. They're angry at the price of energy. They're terribly angry at taxes, considered what they get in exchange. They don't want open borders. I've talked to so many people, and they say, my mom's on dialysis. Why would I want a bunch of people from Oaxaca to come here and crowd these services? And so they're starting to lose their constituencies. They're losing suburban voters who are now upset about crime. They're losing minorities who feel that they're being talked down to by elite white bi-coastal professionals and academics whose culture they abhor.
The good news is the Democrats are losing their base. They've seen what the radicals have to offer, and they don't like it. But what about the rhinos, the Republicans in name only, those candidates who appear conservative until they get into office?
Donald Trump sort of kicked in this door, and then people found out you could appeal to the deplorables, you could get tough on China, you could close the borders. And so we have more and more Republican and conservative candidates that have kind of refuted the old John McCain, Romney. We have to open the border or Hispanics won't like us. We've got to get China into the world community by giving them more concessions. Let's write off the assembly manufacturing. We don't do that here in America anymore. So I think there's a good opportunity in this midterms to see a correction of the magnitude we saw in 2010 or 1994, maybe 50 to 70 seats. We could win back the Senate. And at that point, Joe Biden will be, if he's still in office, will be relegated to just an executive order president barking at the moon, because he doesn't have the charisma or the cognitive ability at this point that Barack Obama did when he lost both houses of Congress.
Biden doesn't have the charisma or cognitive ability to keep the Democrat constituency. He's fortunate just to get up and go to work and stay awake. But what things can we do?
So there's things that we can do if we had a Republican Party that's not compromised. If you are a Republican today and you want to run for the Senate almost anywhere, you're not going to be able to run on a John McCain, Mitt Romney agenda. And the people who tried it, like Liz Cheney, they're going to lose. She's going to lose in Wyoming, and she's from an ancient family there that has enormous influence and power and a network of supporters, and she's got a huge nationwide fundraising apparatus, and she's going to lose. So I think that the Republican Party finally is shedding this image that it's a bunch of white guys on the golf course putting around. It's a party of the middle class, in contrast to the Democratic Party that despises the white working class we know, but really the entire working class, and is a party of very, very wealthy people, the Bill Gates, the Warren Buffetts, the Bloombergs, and then the subsidized lower middle class and poor. They don't care about the middle class, and they make fun of them on 24/7. These are the deplorables. I'm quoting Biden and Obama and Hillary. These are irredeemable, deplorable, and John McCain called them the crazies. So they have a whole language of disparagement for them.
So the irredeemable deplorables are the traditional Americans who want to see our nation come back to reality and gain our nation back from the radicals like Nancy Pelosi, who says she doesn't want a border wall, yet has a wall around her own house.
Just look at the luminaries of the current Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi lives in a huge home in San Francisco in a gated Napa Valley palazzo. Gated. Mark Zuckerberg has a 50,000 square foot home on Hawaii with a wall around. They hate walls. They say they don't work. Barbara Streisand, all of these people down on the PCH in Malibu, same thing. So when you look at the upper middle classes and the wealthy, what are they doing? They're enjoying a level of indulgence, whether it's John Kerry flying all over the world in his private jet to combat climate change, or Bill Gates buying 200,000 acres, and they don't believe in anything more than themselves. And they're indulgent, and they're at war with less well-off people in the interior and the hinterland that are more traditional, and they despise those people. It doesn't go the other way. The traditionalists in the West doesn't really hate this globalist elite. They just feel that they're misled and they don't want to be around them. That elite hates the interior and wakes up every morning saying, what did I do to curb those people? And then they go to bed saying, I don't do enough. They're incessant.
The radical Marxists do have an incessant drive to push down the working class, or at least make them dependent on the all-powerful government. What have conservatives learned from these last few years that the Democrat Party has morphed into a radical Marxist party?
I think one of the things that conservatives learned, that they are brave and they're traditional, and they've learned that the new coastal leftist elite is not your old Democrat, your Hubert Humphrey, or even your Bill Clinton. But they're elitist, they're revolutionaries, and they don't like the middle class. So what conservatives have been doing is, when you look at those tapes of the Virginia parents, the first thing that strikes you is there's an Afghan refugee yelling at the school board. There's an Iranian refugee There's a Taiwanese American. The conservative movement said, we're in the middle class now, and we're the majority, and we want anybody to come in here to attack these people who are ruining our country. And we don't have to have exactly the same agendas. But if you're Mexican American and you don't want your daughter in Salinas to be told that she's really a man from this spoiled brat white teacher that, you know, came out of UC Santa Cruz, then join us. And if you're living in the inner city and you're an African American and armed to protect your family from nightly shootings, you have a right to be armed. That's your constitutional protection. Conservatives found a populist message that transcended race and replaced it with a class conscience that the left thought would be permanent constituents. They come from traditional cultures, some of them, that can be included. And then when that happens, you'll be surprised how quickly a lot of the people on the left will not want open borders. I noticed that we had about 80,000 Cubans that wanted to come here, and the Biden administration stopped that on day one. And they do not want anybody coming to the United States from Venezuela or Cuba. They just do not want it, and they're open about it. They want people from, you know, the Caribbean, or from, not from northern Mexico, from southern Mexico, indigenous people who might be good revolutionary fodder for them.
So without this revolutionary Marxist party that's like a Goliath versus the less powerful majority, once the sleeping giant is awakened and realizes that we've allowed the wrong people to lead us and teach our children with critical race theory, evolution, and a political indoctrination instead of an academic education, they won't be so successful, right?
I think that's pretty much sums it up. This is a revolutionary neo-Marxist socialist movement. They have no public support. That's true. It's contrary to human nature. But that does not mean they will not be successful in implementing it in the schools and the popular culture if they're not challenged. Once they're challenged, and once you're bold about it and say, you know, you can cancel me, you can do anything you want, it has no effect on me, and people start doing that, it will collapse. About every 20 years in the West, there's sort of this fad, this hysteria, Black Lives Matter, where they start out with maybe an understandable worry, and then they go completely crazy in a mass consensual society, and then the traditionals have to put it down. And it's kind of like mowing the lawn. You can't let it go out. So I don't think the wokeness is going to stay, but it could stay if people don't resist it. Everybody that you talk to now in the United States has had it with it. So a lot of these movements keep going and keep going and keep going. It's like a car that ran out of gas and you put it in neutral and it coasts. And so it's coasting now, but the ingredients, Black Lives Matter is totally discredited. The founder of it, Ms. Quellars, has got her fourth home. She moved to White Tapacan Canyon. First thing she built was a $35,000 security fence. I mean, they've completely gone, jumped the shark, as we say, and they're discredited. That's what will happen, but we as traditionalists have a duty to our forebears and our children to stop this, because it will do a lot of damage, and it has done a lot of damage. And I have no patience with a lot of people on the conservative side, the Never Trump right, who feel that they can continually harp on January 6th or Donald Trump said this or that. You know, it's almost like there's a little bit of smoke in the kitchen and I'm going to get out of the house when the whole house is on fire, and they don't really care about that. And they gave us Joe Biden in a close election. Right now, we have an existential threat, and everybody, according to the station, has to speak out against it. And if you don't do that, then you're aiding and abetting what will be a revolutionary takeover of the Western world.
Our guest has been Victor Davis Hanson, author of The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites and Globalism Are Destroying the Idea of America. America is not just a geographical area, but it's a unique idea.
America is an idea. A unique nation in world history that gave the world a model of a nation founded by Christians, by the people, for the people. How individuals could self-govern with liberty and freedom that the world had never seen before.
Our President John Adams said, "Our Constitution was designed for a moral and religious or Christian people, but it's being gravely challenged today by radical Marxist elites who would take away our freedoms, enslave us to their Marxist tyranny, as it's been done throughout history."
Our founders fought a bloody war for our independence from tyrannical rule, and their rallying cry was, "No king but King Jesus."
Amen, sister. It was this idea that Christ set the captives free that made this country. Let's not go back to the bondage of subservience to even our own citizens who have this radical Marxist ideology.
If you would like a CD copy of today's program, please ask for number 1853, Marxism in America, Part 2. That's number 1853, Marxism in America, Part 2. The CD also includes last week's program, Part 1. You can order a CD copy from our website. Our website is issuesineducation.org. That's issuesineducation.org. Please give us a call at 928-776-0000. That's 928-776-0000. From Proverbs 3, verse 5, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding." For Issues in Education, this has been Bob and Jerry Boyd.